Hello and welcome to the EDH Reccast. My name is Joey Schultz and I'm joined as always by my fantastic co-hosts. First up, the guy who, when asked by a group of Commander players, "Hey, do you want to play, Matt?" He responded, "No thanks, I already have one." That's Matt Morgan.
Your attempt at a dad joke has ruined my attempt for a dad joke.
I'm proud of that one, but go ahead, Matt. Please, as always, treat us with your lovely dad jokes.
Well, I was going to ask you how you can make a waterbed more bouncy. And all you got to do is add a little spring water.
You know what? I think you've earned the dad joke back. That one got me good. I love it. Next, he's not Day 9, but he is Dana. It's Dana Roach.
This show will come out on July 3rd, and I'm pretty excited to see how many views we get, because the only real competition we're going to have that day is the world streaming premiere of the original Broadway production of Hamilton. So we'll be fine. I'm sure we'll have all the eyeballs on us instead of that. Numbers will be huge.
Oh, no. That.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's not a thing that we thought about. Maybe we'll see if we can fudge our release date a little bit, because that is funny. Anyway, this is the EDH Reccast. EDH Rec is the best deck building resource on the web for the Commander format, compiling data from deck lists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And here on the podcast, what we like to do is give all that data a little more context. Hey guys, what are we talking about this week?
We're talking about whether or not Core Set 2021 is the best core set ever.
It's so exciting. Like, it's really, really good. And I know this is what's funny, is that Jumpstart previews happened right after Core 21, and they are also really, really exciting. But I mean, I know that we might be a little bit late in getting around to the core set with our release schedule and stuff, but I am so happy about this core set. It's so cool. Yeah. And so we want to talk about all the cards going on there, because I think we're all really, really happy with what's going on in this core set.
Yeah, it might be. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I agree with Dane and say, like, this is probably one of the best core sets we've ever had.
The best since Alpha?
I would say M12, because I'm partial to the Titans, but it's still, extremely good. I would say top five easily.
Yeah, we're really, really excited. So we can't wait to go through some of those cards, talk about where they might fall within the realm of EDH. But before we get there, we have to give a huge thank you to Josh the Quiet and the whole team at the Command Zone, who handle all of the post-production work on the podcast and make it look as awesome as it does. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors too.
So we're going to talk about a lot of cards today, and you know where you can get some of these cards that we talk about. In fact, all of the cards, CardKingdom.com and TCGPlayer.com. They are the awesome sponsors for the show. They'll provide all the up-to-date pricing information on the website, and you can buy your cards and support the show while you're at it. Just go to CardKingdom.com/EDHREC, or just click on one of the TCG Player price links on the site. That'll take you right to where you want to go. Buy those cards you're going to get anyways. Pre-order them for M21 if you really want to, and you can support the show doing it that way as well. So CardKingdom.com and TCGPlayer.com are amazing sponsors.
Awesome stuff. All right, now we are going to get into it. We want to talk about Core 21, and next week we'll be talking about Jumpstart. These are two back-to-back sets that have absolutely stunned me. I'm really, really excited. We're going to start off with the legendary creatures, the new commanders from Core 21. And Matt, the first one we're talking about, there's no way that we can give this card to anyone but you to talk about, to read for us. It's so delightful. Please grace us with the information, the loveliness, the goodness of Rin and Sari.
I do have a brand, Joey, so I thank you for appreciating the creature types here. But Rin and Sari, Inseparable. They are the new Naya commanders. They are one in Naya, so that is a red, green, and a white for a 4/4 legendary. Ready for it? Dogcat. It is Rin and Sari. I'm not sure which is which, if Rin is the dog or the cat, but it doesn't really matter. They're both great. But also, whenever you cast a dog spell, Rin and Sari creates a 1/1 green cat creature token. And whenever you create whenever you cast a cat spell, you create a 1/1 white dog creature token. But then you can also pay a red, a green, and a white and tap it, and to have Rin and Sari Inseparable deal damage to any target equal to the number of dogs you control, and then you also gain life equal to the number of cats you control. Guys, this is pet tribal, and I love it.
Well, it's pet tribal, and it's a fun card in that regard, but it's a perfectly playable commander card too. You're not playing this because you just want the silly meme. You can play this and feel comfortable sitting down at a table and have a chance to win. This is a good card.
Yeah, very, very much. I really like that ability. Although, Matt, I think you've observed that the ability seems a little backwards, right?
The ability is a little backwards, but I mean, Joey and Dana, we were all talking, and they said, well, it's kind of weird. There aren't any demons in this set. And I said, that's not true at all. There's cats, and cats are demons. So I think flavor-wise, cats should be the ones dealing the damage, but that's just personal preference right there.
Well, in my guess is that's perhaps due to the fact that we do have multiple spells that put cat tokens in play. There's Fire Cat Blitz and White Sun's Zenith and Waiting in the Weeds that are in those colors. So it's much easier to make, you know, a dozen cat tokens and then dome somebody for a lot of damage versus a bunch of dog tokens. So I think that was probably, I'm guessing, maybe a little bit of a power speed bump. Right.
Well, and that's something too, that the numbers kind of support having more cats in general in the deck. There's only 9 actual dog creatures in M21, not counting Rin and Sari. So 10 when you think about it. That's compared to almost 200 cats that are in Magic so far. That's a huge, huge difference. And Gavin Verhey did say they were going to go back and errata a lot of hounds into being dogs moving forward. I'm not really sure what the list is, the full list of cards that will be affected by that errata, but Dana did some looking up. There's 79 hounds currently. So even if all of those come around to being dogs, the numbers still favor playing a lot more cats than they do dogs.
Yeah, and some of the most popular hounds that exist right now, according to EDH Rec, include some that might not necessarily fit or jive with this particular one, like Inox Survivalist, for example, which is a morph hound shaman, or then there's Mowu, Loyal Companion, who is the best boy, but also that's a plus one counters deck. It might be kind of different. So you might be relying a little bit on some of the newer dogs to fulfill the dog stuff going on in the Rin and Sari deck, but you've got a lot of cats to choose from. So I do think that this is really exciting, and it also gets me right in the feels. This is the type of adorability that I absolutely love. I'm close to calling this what I think might become the most popular commander from the set, which is why we wanted to start off with it, in addition to the fact that it's a really, really good boy. But it is just really, really cool. And so keep an eye on the numbers there, but probably expect that the cat balance will be much bigger for now when you were starting to build the deck. Just that balance within the deck, there's going to be a lot more cats. All right, let's move on to our next commander. Dana, who are we talking about next?
The next one we have on the list is Rada, Heart of Keld, a 3-mana elf warrior, 3/3. As long as your turn, Rada, Heart of Keld, has first strike, and you may look at the top card of your library at any time, and you may play lands from the top of your library. For 6 mana, 4 red and green, Rada gets +X until end of turn, where X is a number of lands you control. So it's another, you know, lands matter / landfall commander that has a win condition kind of built into the commander. You know, it's different enough from Mina and Den and from Angry Omnath to probably get used as a commander, and it's useful enough that it will probably show up in a Mina and Den deck and in an Angry Omnath deck.
Yeah, I'm very, very much in love with this particular design. Landfall is a crowded, crowded field. I think this is my personal favorite design from the entire set in terms of the legendary creatures. I love this design for Rada because you now have a almost Voltron-esque commander damage option right there, which isn't really a thing that you've seen from a lot of the other landfall options out there. So you're breaking new ground even within what is already a very well-steeped and very crowded archetype. So I hope that the other landfall options in Gruul don't crowd out Rada too much. I think that she has a lot that she can do, and she brings something really new and very, very exciting. Like, you don't need to activate that ability too many times for this to be crushingly lethal.
Yeah, I think Rada's a very, very powerful card. This probably is my favorite of the three versions of Rada that we have. I know some people have kind of knocked it for not having any evasion, but you're in red and green, so it's not like it's even hard to give trample to Rada here. I mean, you're probably playing some number of those effects in the deck. You're probably even playing some of these other landfall commanders we're talking about, like Mina and Den, granting Rada trample, and then also being able to replay lands and doing all that kind of fun stuff. I think it's a very powerful deck, and coming down on turn 3 is not irrelevant. That's a pretty aggressive start, especially if you have some ramp on turn 1. You can turn Rada sideways pretty quickly and pretty powerfully.
Yeah, and I love too that it doesn't feel hyper dependent upon having a lot of landfall abilities. It actually is fine if you run out of lands to go find. You don't need this to be a strictly landfall deck with all of your Avenger of Zendikar stuff. Like, that will still be good, but if you just want to focus on making this like a deck where rubble hulk effects or Blackblade Reforged, for example, like that is a deck where you can just like, yeah, I'm going to have 20 lands and all my creatures will be lethal as a result of it. Watch your back. Like that is a very powerful new dynamic for Landfall that I'm just so excited to see. So this one also really, really love it. And that is breaking new ground in a really established archetype. So, so happy about this. But there's one more multicolored commander that we want to talk about in this set too. Matt, who we got next?
Next is Niambi, a Steam Speaker. She is a blue and a white. For 2/1 human cleric, has flash. Niambi, a Steam Speaker, enters the battlefield. You may return another target creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, you gain life equal to that creature's converted mana cost. Then you can also pay 1, a blue and a white, and tap Niambi, and you discard a legendary card to draw 2 cards. This one, I'm not as jazzed as the other two that we've talked about so far. I think it's a better card for the 99, but what do you guys think?
I agree on the 99. I think this is a card that people that are playing Afara are really excited about because the flash, once you flash the creature in on their player's turn, which Afara wants to draw you a card, and you then bounce back another creature with flash to your hand that you can then flash in on someone else's turn to get another card draw. It's a, just a nice little piece that works well in an Afara deck. I definitely think we'll see this in the 99 more than we will see it as a commander, which I think is true of a whole lot of these cards we're going to talk about. A lot, they're all quite interesting, but I think they are pieces versus the actual driving machine for the most part.
That is also I think I'm on board with that too. A lot of the stuff that I think I would want to do with the abilities Niambi showcases include things that I'm probably already able to do a little bit better with Wrath Capuchin or with Afara or even with Brago. Like I see that Niambi doesn't care necessarily that you discard a legendary creature. You can maybe have like a Planeswalker deck, for example. But if I'm playing Planeswalkers, I actually might want to use Brago because Brago can blink and reset Planeswalkers to use their abilities multiple times. So it is, you know, a little tough to say exactly, but as a role player within those different decks, I'm actually really excited to see her in the 99, even for the Cissei, Captain of the Weatherlight, whatever the 5-color version is. I forget. I know there's multiple, but this is also another thing that you can use to add to your Weatherlight crew because this is another thing that cares about legendary stuff. So I'm excited to see it, but it definitely feels like a bit of a 99er. Our next one, we're moving on to some mono-colored commanders now. This next one, it's got a weird first line of text, but I don't know. I'm trying to make up my mind on it. Joelriel Monvoli Recluse, 2-mana, 1/2 human druid, and it's got an ability that is very reminiscent of a Jeskai commander we saw printed recently. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 2/2 green cat creature token, and you can pay 6. Until end of turn, creatures you control have base power and toughness XX, where X is the number of cards in your hand. So green is moved from using creatures to draw cards to now it's creatures care about you drawing cards. Like this is, that first ability is just straight up the text of Gavi. Like I thought that was a Jeskai ability to make 2/2 cats. That's a little weird, right?
I would argue, Joey, that there's nothing in the color pie more green than taking a good ability from another color and then doing the same thing.
Oh man, yeah, this also could be a great role player in commander decks like Azuri Claw of Progress, for example. But man, green, I have seen plenty of green decks get easily 20 cards in their hand off of a Rishkar's expertise, so I'm not even sure that the making cat tokens is what's most exciting about Joelriel so much as just like, yeah, you can make a couple of small things here and then pay 6 and everything gets +20/+20 because you've got your Rishkars and your Garrick Wildspeaker freed. I can't remember the name of that card, even though I have it in like 5 of my decks. But like this is a very scary overrun ability, a lot like Rada's ability. This one impresses me a lot too, because green, it's not going to be difficult to make that big.
I do think the cat thing is relevant though. I think if it was making a 2/2 beast or something, we would be less interested. I think people that are playing the Rinnan Sari deck might consider it as a way to make more cats. I think people that are playing Arabo might care about it to make some cats because there's, you know, there's not that many out there compared to, you know, elves or zombies or something. So I think that is a relevant thing too, that it does make cats. It's not nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of this card for commander. I think it might be sneaky good for like some standard situations. Sure. But for here, it's just kind of, I don't think I'm ever going to see. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't think I'm ever going to be compelled to play a Joelriel deck. There are certain decks maybe that I would like it in the 99, but it feels torn to me. I'm kind of with you, Joey. I'm not really sure what to think of it. I want to like it, but I'm not sure if I can bring myself to it. Maybe it's just the cats.
That might be it. You are a little anti-cat. I'm actually very threatened by that ability. Like, if you put this into a Tatiova deck, for example, like, that is a deck that can absolutely use Laboratory Maniac to just completely win the game by drawing so many cards. But there are plenty of Simic decks that draw so many cards, but could also use a way to make that a bit more fun and lethal. And this definitely strikes me as a great option for decks that draw as many cards as green and blue have been wont to do recently. Let's move on now to some red commanders. Who's next?
Up next, we have Sabira Tulzidi Caravaneer. That's a mouthful. She's a human shaman, 2/3 with haste, and you can spend one colorless mana. Another target creature with power 2 or less can't be blocked this turn. And for one in red, you can tap her and discard your hand until end of turn whenever a creature you control with power 2 or less deals combat damage to a player. Draw a card. Once again, this is the kind of card that's going to have a home in decks like Alesha Who Smiles at Death, where it can poke through unblockable and help those smaller creatures Alesha decks tend to run also poke through. And it's not terrible as a commander either. It's an interesting kind of niche card in red, just like most of the rest of these are. They're something that are filling a small void that maybe isn't being filled. I'm not going to build the deck, but I like the card.
Yeah, I really like this one a lot too. It's very inventive to be able to focus on this part of red and not necessarily always relying upon like a shared animosity to help you finish the game, but using this as a new type of engine, and especially pairing it with effects like, I think, Cavalcade of Calamity, where whenever you attack with tiny creatures, it's going to deal a lot of damage too. So this is the thing that I'm really excited for them to use a little bit more often, with red's focus on tiny creatures. But yeah, putting this into an Alesha deck also seems a little bit nasty, because that fuels the graveyard too. And that seems really good.
You just couldn't go one set review without mentioning the graveyard, could you, Joe?
I can't go one episode without mentioning the graveyard.
But that's a good point. Like I mentioned Joel Rael being able to make cat tokens being relevant. That's a relevant ability here, whether it's a graveyard deck or it's a madness deck or a hellbent deck. Like, there are other decks that do want that ability on a body that has haste and is unblockable. It's just a piece that can fit in a whole bunch of different decks depending on what you want to do.
Yeah, and there's clever things you can do with this type of unblockability too. I don't know about you, but I kind of want to throw a Quietus Spike on a creature that Subira will make unblockable, but I'm also really, really nasty like that. I like cutting people's lives in half, so that's just, yeah, I'm really enchanted by Subira, and I'm excited for it.
It is worth mentioning too, you can use that ability on other players' creatures. It's not restricted to only your creatures, so you can get political with it. Not that I recommend getting political in your Magic games. Let's just play straight up, not worry about making friends. But neither here nor there. Let's move on.
Can't say I agree.
Let's move on. We'll move on anyways to Gadrek the Crown Scourge. It is 2 and a red for a legendary dragon. We have our token dragon for the set, 5/4 with flying. And Gadrek the Crown Scourge can't attack unless you control 4 or more artifacts. And then at the beginning of your end step, create a treasure token for each non-token creature that died this turn. Now, 5/4 for 3 mana is a pretty good rate, but I'm not really sure that ability really helps it out much. What do you guys think about Gadrek?
I feel as though, again, sort of like with Niambi, a lot of the stuff that I'd want to do around this ability is probably fulfilled by some other folks. And so I'm more inclined to call this one a 99er as well.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think if you're looking to play a red commander that makes mana, there's a couple in the Hebs that maybe do a little bit better. But in the 99, I mean, any kind of mono red dragon deck tends to really struggle with not playing all 7 drops. This gives you a relatively cheap dragon. It's a 5/4 and mono red. You're probably running a ton of mana rocks. So like, even if it's not part of your strategy, it's probably pretty easy to just accidentally have enough artifacts out to swing with this even before you're making treasure. And there's probably some, you know, Rakdos decks that tend to sacrifice a lot of your own creatures as well that are going to generate value off this. Yeah, I will guess we're not going to see it atop a lot of decks, but as with all of these, to keep repeating myself, there's just a lot of different roles that can fill in a bunch of different decks.
Well, and something I love so much about this particular set is that I'm excited to try out like potentially flavor themed decks around this. Like, Gadrek strikes me as a great one to just emulate the Smaug. Like, I'm going to play a dragon deck that has all hordes full of treasure. Like, that is something exciting to access with these too. So if that's what it ends up becoming, just a very flavorful deck where you've got plenty of dragons hoarding their piles of gold, that also sounds like like a ton of fun. So yeah, there's other commanders that maybe do the same thing too, but like that is a flavor aspect that I gotta admit I'm really intrigued by too. I might consider that.
Yeah. Well, and I think if you're playing something like a Kiri that's already playing a lot of artifacts too, Gadrex just a 3-mana 5/4 with flying. I mean, then it turns into a very good card and you're probably playing a lot more support to further reward yourself for having a lot of artifacts. So I think that's a very, very natural home for Gadrex to go in.
Or Marchesa the Black Rose would be a great one too, because you've got plenty of creatures dying and this will come back and then resupply you with a bunch of treasures to help out with all of the stuff that Marchesa is constantly letting you die and sacrifice stuff. So that could also be a really great, really fun one too.
Yep.
The next commander that we've got, we probably won't spend too much time on it. This is Karavek the Spiteful, 4-mana, 3/2. It's a black human warlock that says other creatures get -1/-1. I don't think that there's too much to go for this particular one. An analogous card to this is Knight of Souls Betrayal, a 4-mana enchantment that does basically the same thing, and that only shows up in 626 decks on EDHREX, so going by the numbers, this probably won't be a necessarily popular effect, but a card that I do want to pair this with, like where I think that Karavek will find its home, is in Grismold the Dreadsower decks, because Grismold gives everyone plant tokens, and then you kill all the plant tokens, and something like Karavek can help you do that, and then Grismold gets huge. So I think that this is also a 99er, but it's got a home that is really, really excited to have it.
Yeah, that's a very, very good place for it. I mean, any decks, what is it, the Evan card that gives all your black creatures +1/+1, and then all the other creatures -1/-1, that's a very theme, a flavorful deck right there too. So I'm kind of with Joey, where a lot of these, you know, mono-colored commanders, they're flavorful and they do have homes, but I just don't know what's going to make me want to play a few of these as the head of their own deck.
Right. But them being such natural inclusions to a commander deck is also, I think, really exciting, too. Yeah. And that is also definitely true of our next legend here.
Yeah. Up next, we have Vito, Thorn of the Dusk Rose, a 3-mana mono black commander, 2 and a black for a vampire cleric. So vampires are always a relevant subtype, and clerics tend to be kind of relevant in particularly Orzhov decks as well. It's a 1/3. Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. So that's been an effective thing on a card in EDH's history.
That's not a combo piece at all.
Right, no, right. And that would probably be enough. This would be a playable card if that's all it was. But we have 3 black-black. Creatures you control gain a lifelink until end of turn. So you have an enabler right there on the card.
That's so good. You've got exquisite blood sanguine bond combo right here as a part of your command zone, but also life gain decks rejoice. You've got another epic way to execute that combo. And oh man, like this is real cool. Again, probably more of a role filler, but I'd be pretty threatened if I saw this as an actual commander across the field too.
I tend to agree it's a role filler, but I think of all the ones we've talked about, it's probably the one most likely to be atop its own deck, I would guess.
Of the monocolored.
Yeah. Oh, the mono color
so far,
ones, yeah.
I think so. Yeah, and it, I mean, it's not like mono black life gain is a new thing either. There's already precedent for, you know, Vito to have decks built around him. So yeah, I do agree that there's probably going to be a fair amount of Vito decks built, just because I mean, Vito he sounds like he's part of the mob, and that's scary enough to make people build decks. So yeah, mono black life gain probably going to be a thing.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I'm absolutely loving that one, and I'm also terrified about it. There are 2 more mono-colored legends that we got to get to here. One of them is Baron Talarian Archmage. 3-mana, 2/2 human wizard. When it enters the battlefield, return up to 1 other target creature or planeswalker to its owner's hand. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent was put into your hand from the battlefield this turn, draw a card. Doesn't strike me as being too exciting as a commander itself, but that's perfectly fine because I think that there are a lot of Enala players or Naru Meha players or Naban Dean of Iteration players who are excited to have another member of their ranks.
Well, and the sad thing is too about Baron is that it's perfectly fair, but it just pales in comparison to what a lot of other mono blue commanders can be doing. Like, this isn't a slouch of a commander by any means.
Yeah.
I mean, being able to bounce things, drawing cards, that's good, but the fact that they showed some, you know, deference about overpowering this mono blue commander on like Urza or anything like that, and you can only draw one card per turn. I mean, that's I appreciate their control about that, but it kind of stinks that it pales compared to so many other mono blue commanders out there.
It does, but it also has a home, and I'm excited for it to find that home. So yeah, that's fine. The one that we're really aching to get to is the one that has set a new precedent. As soon as we saw it previewed for Core 21, everyone started buzzing about this. We know that we're probably a week behind in actually getting around to this, but this is one of the things that has us like, okay, Core 21, this is a set that knows what's up, because our final commander here is Mangara the Diplomat. 3 and a white, human cleric, 2/4 with lifelink. Whenever an opponent attacks with creatures, if two or more of those creatures are attacking you and or planeswalkers you control, you draw a card. And whenever an opponent casts their second spell each turn, you draw a card. They made a white card that draws cards, and it's actually good.
This card is so good. This is so great. Like, I would build mono white to play this because you're able to keep up in games. It's a 2/4, so it's a good blocker. It's got lifelink, and then you draw cards. It doesn't really require you to do a lot, but it just punishes everybody else for doing things that are above and beyond. It's drawing cards in the most white way possible, which is making sure that everybody plays fair, and I love it. I love the design of this card. I think it's great.
And it's as a legendary creature, it's good. First of all, it's just generically good in any white deck that needs draw in the 99. It's, if you treat it as a draw spell in white, that's really, really a good, really, really good. It's a really useful card. But you can go fetch it with Kethys Sisse. It's going to do useful things as a legend in a Kethys the Hidden Hand deck. So it has a ton of utility, even in color combinations that aren't as desperate for draw as mono white is.
Yeah, absolutely. If I am going to level any criticism against this particular commander, it doesn't necessarily point you in any specific direction. So that is a thing to be aware of. But the engine that this provides you is still substantial enough that it gives you a degree of freedom that I don't know that we've ever necessarily had for mono white decks. For example, I'm really personally fond of God Eternal Oketra, and that gives you a bunch of zombie tokens when you cast tiny creatures. So the point of the deck is to like make a bunch of those, and that gives the deck a very solid direction. Or you've got other equipment focused commanders too. So that gives you a solid direction. And I tend to really like commanders that say, hey, I do this, and then I want to do that thing well. And that is usually what I'm drawn to. So Mangara is a little bit more, I have to bring the deck to it as opposed to it creating a pathway for me. But that is still a level of like, you're allowed to be more creative with this one now. And that's also, I think, very exciting, because that is a thing that we see in a lot of colors, but we don't always get for a mono white deck too.
Yeah, this can be kind of your wild card commander that can be atop whatever thematic deck you want to build in mono white, kind of like you oftentimes see Kenrith the Return King in five color or Ranimal's Dragon Engine, where it's just going to be a good commander whatever you put underneath it. It's going to do something useful. This will be the same thing in white. Whatever strange mono white thing you want to do, this is always going to be a useful commander atop it.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that there will be a huge initial surge to play something like this and to let it branch out and to find some new areas to explore, almost as a mono white good stuff, which isn't usually the kind of thing that you hear. But I'm very excited for that prospect.
That has never been said, actually, Joey. Nobody's ever said
brand new archetype, Joey. Mono white good stuff. never been done before.
I do really like Mangara, though. Like it's nice to see, and even Mark Rosewater, when they kind of announced this card, said, you know, we realize that, you know, card draw is too essential to the game for mono white to be left out. So this is kind of the first step they're taking. And I really appreciate that. I'm not looking forward to playing against this on Arena, because I play mono red pretty much all the time. And in standard, this is going to be such a beater. So yeah, I'm not looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to seeing it in a commander game.
Yeah, you're definitely going to draw way more cards off of the, you know, fact that people are casting spells, and maybe there will be slight discouragement of attacking you from the other ability, but that's enough. This is a cool signpost of things to come, and that's what has us so excited about it, and it's a cool card both at the head of its own deck and in the 99. Super love it.
I think overall I am more excited about this suite of legends than I was for what we got in the commander decks or what we got in Ikoria. I don't know if they're better necessarily, but at least for me, most of the stuff in Ikoria and the commander decks, if you didn't want to build the thing it was telling you to build, if you didn't want to build a mutate deck or didn't want to build the cycling deck, those commanders weren't any good to you. You weren't doing anything with them at all. They're just not cards you're going to ever play. even if you don't want to build these as your commander, almost all of these can be put in some other deck to do a thing. And I'm much more interested in looking at things like that, that I feel like at some point down the road, these could all be in a future deck I build. And that's just not true of the stuff from Ikoria for the most part, or from the commander set this year. That isn't a bad thing. They're just different things. And for me, this is much more interesting.
What's funny is that I actually kind of wanted to save this as like a final note on the show, but maybe I'll throw it in now. I think that Core 21 has a severe risk of becoming an overshadowed set, much like we talked about, I think it was a few weeks ago now, where we talked about overshadowed commanders. This is sandwiched up against a lot of other products that are coming out with a lot of very interesting brand new cards too. So there's the potential that all of these, especially because they're monocolored, which tends to be a less popular form of deck building in EDH according to the numbers we see on our site. I think a lot of these run the risk of being overlooked compared to just the glut of products that's coming out right now. But I really hope that they get their due time, because these are exciting at the head of the deck, and a whole bunch of them go perfectly into the 99. These are really, really cool. And we just talked about Legends. We haven't gotten to the cards in the 99 yet. Let's talk about some of those cards in the 99. Before we get to any of the original ones, one of the reasons we're so excited about this set is because the reprints are off the charts in Core 21. Oh my goodness.
That they are. I mean, Heroic Intervention is absolutely insane. Azusa reprint, I mean, just playing all the lands. There's so much going on here, guys. I love it. Fabled Passage gets a reprint, pretty quick turnaround too. I mean, that was just an Eldraine, but it never really had a chance to get cheap because it was so good. And seeing that reprinted right away, like I love that too.
Yeah, there's Containment Priest, which is really, really nasty against Graveyard players like me, by the way, so you should play it because it's good. Massacre Worm, Ugin. We got Ugin again. Grim Tutor, that didn't need to be $200, and it's much more affordable now. Like, yeah, these reprints are crazy. And the reprints in Jumpstart, which is probably the thing that people are buzzing on most often right now, the reprints in that are also totally sick. But don't let that overshadow the fact that this set's also got it going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay. It makes it more, actually, I should say I'm more okay with the reprints not being as great in the pre-cons that we just had for Ikoria, if they're going to make core sets this juiced, and then stuff like Jumpstart that is also just absolutely insane. It's just, they turned up the reprint quality on these, and that's just so great. I love seeing it, and just the fact that they're putting so much effort into it and letting the pre-cons kind of maybe support the main sets they come with and enabling different decks. If they're going to give us reprints here, I think it's a little more forgivable that they're not putting as many reprints in those pre-cons.
People get excited about the show ponies. This set is filled with workhorses, and you need workhorses to get the work done.
That's a great way to phrase it. And I think, Matt, I take the contrary opinion to you, where I'm like, this proves that you could have put good reprints in all of the other products too, right? Sure. So that's kind of where my mind is at.
I would rather get them anywhere than put them where I want them, though. I think a lot of people, they expect it, when really we're going to get it just in different places. They're going to spread the love around. If that is the case, as long as we're getting them, that's better than not getting them like we had been kind of in years past.
Yeah, and that's absolutely a great thing to take away. This stuff, and we haven't even gotten to the original cards in the 99. Let's get to those now, because there's some really cool workhorses, like you just mentioned there, Dana. Start us off with a handful that we see in white. What are some new cards that we got going on here?
The first one we have here is Idol of Endurance. It's an artifact, but it's white. It's two and a white to cast. When Idol of Endurance enters a battlefield, exile all creature cards with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard until Idol of Endurance leaves the battlefield. And then for one and a white, you can tap it until end of turn. You may cast creature spells from among the cards exiled with Idol of Endurance without paying their mana cost. It's not draw, but it's card advantage in white, which white tends to be solely hurting for.
Indeed,
I think I'm a little, like, the internet went crazy. Like, people on Twitter were going nuts for this card when it was spoiled. I think it's solid. It's fine. I'm maybe less hyped on it than a lot of people are.
I'm a big fan of it, actually. Like, there's enough kind of white weenie type decks out there in Commander that this is going to give you, even if it gives you 4 or 5 different cards out of your graveyard that you get to play over the course of the game, that's recurring enough. And in mono white decks, like you said, they are needing some sort of card advantage. The fact that you don't get blown out by this, like, yes, it comes in the battlefield, exiles all the creature cards in your graveyard that fall into that 3 or less category, But they come back to the graveyard when this goes away. That means you're not losing out. It doesn't fold to Grave Hate. It's a very good card. I think it's a great engine. I at first kind of hem and hawed about it, but the more that I've looked at it, the more I really appreciate it. There's still some good targets that you can get, especially if you're pairing it, you know, white with any other color. You're getting a bunch of creatures that you're going to be able to play that you would want to be recurring anyways. So I am a fan of this card.
I if you are playing stuff like if you're in black two, for example, you can run other cards like Immortal Servitude that might be a smidge more efficient right off the bat. But especially if you are in a monocolor or if you're playing some Boros or maybe some Hate Bears type of strategy, this strikes me as something that's going to be exceedingly annoying and making sure that you never quite get rid of the stuff that you want to get rid of. And that a Sun Titan's always going to be able to help bring this back too. Mm-hmm. So like using the concept of eternity, like these cards never go away as a form of white's card advantage is something I'm excited to see the continue exploring.
Well, and even having this come down and it protects everything from future, you know, graveyard hates. You play this, you get all your creatures out. Somebody plays a Bajuka Bog on you next turn. Like, well, you just saved all those that you get to then recur later, which might be even more devastating otherwise. Like, I like the utility behind this. I think it's going to be a very good role player in certain decks, and I'm excited to find a home for it.
But I think that's going to be the problem. I think finding a home will be the issue. I think it's a good card in theory. I think in practice, To put it in your deck, you need to have a certain density of small creatures and you need to not have better ways to recur them that this is going to get in the way of. And I think there's less decks that meet that criteria than people maybe think there are.
But Dana, I guess we'll see. Let me tell you about this card called Alurin. You may have heard of it. It's so good.
Up next, Dana, going back again to workhorses, this is a cool card called Light of Promise that is kind of a little bit similar to a card called Sunbond that already exists. Light of Promise, 3-mana enchantment or enchanted creature. Enchanted creature has, whenever you gain life, you put that many +1 counters on this creature. I just want to throw this out there as another card that I really appreciate. Sunbond is a 4-mana version of this effect that shows up in nearly 1,300 decks. If you're playing some Daxos, Blessed by the Sun, or Karlov of the Ghost Council, this can be a really cool way to make your commanders a lot more lethal than people maybe associate with life gain. So keep your eye on this one. I really like it too. Let's get on to some of the other ones though. What about the stuff that we've got in blue? Blue's got some real crazy rares, y'all.
Well, blue has some real crazy planeswalkers even, and go figure it's a Teferi card, but Teferi Master of Time is 2 blue-blue for a 3 starting loyalty planeswalker, but you may activate loyalty abilities of Teferi Master Time on any player's turn, and at any time you can cast an instant. So right off the bat, that's just insane with static abilities on planeswalkers. But then you can also +1, you draw a card and then you discard a card. You can -3 Teferi, target creature you don't control phases out. Coming back in a core set. And then also you can -10 Teferi and you take 2 extra turns after this one. Not 1, but 2 extra turns. This is bug nutty.
This thing with a pure imaginative rascal in play probably shouldn't be allowed to happen because pure will give it additional +1 counters. Excuse me, loyalty counters when you activate the +1 ability. I am shocked that this commander, I'm all over my words. I'm sorry. I'm just so impressed by Teferi and his 8 different artworks. But like he can protect himself in 2 different ways, because if mm-hmm. he might be dealt lethal damage, you can +1 and narrowly escape it, or you can have something phase out so it doesn't exist anymore. This thing's real mean, and if you're in a planeswalker deck that can add an extra loyalty to this thing, I'm scared.
It's also the kind of card that rewards skill for all the reasons you just mentioned, Joey. There's tricks you can do with this in a way you can't traditionally do tricks with planeswalker cards, and that's always fun.
Yeah, I think this is also cool just to play in other mono blue decks, just to like maybe help fill your graveyard if you're looking for ways to get spells or artifacts into the yard. But especially for the planeswalker decks that love it. And man, if you are playing Pierre Imaginative Rascal in any of your decks, if you're like, make room for this one in particular. I think that's a great pairing that will really, really mess people up a lot.
It's weird that Simic decks are doing crazy things that's never been seen before in Magic.
I know.
In the history. But even being able to loot 4 times in a turn cycle, that in itself is a very, very powerful engine.
Yeah, so it's right. That's super strong.
Yeah, like everybody's going to talk about just the static ability and being able to take all the turns, but you get a lot of card equity in this in Teferi. So it's pretty great. It's pretty insane, and I'm not looking forward to playing against it at all.
Indeed. Up next, we've got a card called Discontinuity.
Discontinuity. 3 blue, blue, blue for an instant. As long as it's your turn, this spell costs 2 blue, blue less to cast. So at that point, it'll be 1 and a blue. And it simply says, end the turn.
End the turn.
Which we've seen before on Time Stop, which I think makes this card relatively easy to evaluate. If you're playing some kind of a blue deck where Time Stop is really effective, this is a second version of the same effect. And if you already don't care about Time Stop, I'm not sure you necessarily care about this. So it's a cool card, but I think it's relatively cut and dry whether or not you want it.
Yeah, Time Stop doesn't show up. It's not very popular. It's in maybe 1,400 decks or so. But the ability to use this to end your turn in response to end of turn triggers that might be detrimental to you, like Sundial of the Infinite can, and that one shows up in over 3,300 decks. You can use this as a way to help out Cedrus the Traitor King to make sure that your creatures do not get completely exiled by casting the spell in response to the exile trigger. Or the same is true for Enala, Archmage Ritualist. So there are a handful of other commanders that are looking forward to taking advantage of this to completely shut down someone else's turn, but also to assist the advancement of their own board.
Yeah, it's got some tricks to it. It's got a lot of play to it. It'll be interesting to see how people use it in Commander. I'm just not one of those people that's going to try to figure it out.
Of course. In that case, why don't you tell us what you think of Sublime Epiphany?
Sublime Epiphany, the mega cryptic command. It is 4 blue, blue. For an instant that says choose one or more, and you can choose either counter target spell, you can counter target activated or triggered ability, you can return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, you can also choose to create a token that's a copy of target creature you control, and you can also just casually have target player draw a card. All told, there are 31 different combinations of abilities that you can pick for one spell. It is 31 spells in one spell.
I don't know that you'll ever get the full suite of each of these abilities all in one go, but I don't know. This seems worth it for 6 mana, but the only place I really think that I can necessarily say that I'd be eager to play it is in a Brutaclad deck, because it can create a token copy of something you already have. So this is another way to get some cool tokens for Brutaclad to copy around. Do you think that this makes it into the counterspell suite for other maybe controlling or spellslingery blue decks?
I think there's so much value on it. I can't imagine a situation where someone casts it and I say, why is that in this deck? I think if you're playing blue, I will understand your logic for running this. On the same hand, if you tell me it's not good enough for your deck, I can't think of a blue deck where I'm going to say, why is that not in your deck?
Yeah.
Okay, you can generically jam in any blue deck and probably generate value, but if you don't run it, I totally get it too.
I mean, it's impossible. Just if you counter target spell, you bounce something, you create a copy of your a creature you control, and then you draw a card, that's easily going to be one of the most played versions. It's kind of like the counter draw, you know, on Cryptic Command. That is easily 6 mana worth of value on one card. So
every time.
Like you said, it is very, very easy to get, 5 of the 6 modes routinely. And if, you know, you're playing it against like some, I don't know, spell, you know, like a gutter snipe, they cast a spell to get a gutter snipe trigger, you happen to get that too, perfect. Like you're it's just gravy at that point. But man, it's going to be very, very easy to get that value's worth. So it won't surprise me ever to see that.
Yeah, and possibly, I don't know, maybe Mizzix doesn't necessarily need the help, but playing this for 2 mana instead of the full 6 sounds really, really great. Here's the blue card that I'm personally most excited about, though. That's Teferi's Ageless Insight. 4 mana, legendary enchantment. If you would draw a card, except the first one you draw, in each of your draw steps, you draw 2 cards instead. Oh, no, they shouldn't have done this for me.
It's very, very good. I mean, it's half of an Alhemer. It's all archive, and it's the more important part.
The important part.
This is a very, very good card, folks.
Yeah, play this and stuff like, I don't know if you want to necessarily play it in Arjun the Shifting Flame, because it might kill you, but you can play it in stuff like Gavi Nest Warden, for example, to almost immediately get the procs for the cat tokens that you need. Or just blue decks in general. I'm personally most excited to put this into Kaneos and Hero, because I draw a lot of extra cards in that particular deck. If you're doing some wheelie stuff, this is going to be really, really good too. You're going to get a lot of stuff. This is a very... I'm so excited for this particular one. They love blue so much. They love me.
And there's a lot of different decks that are not at all similar that want it. Like, you can justify running this in those Bant Enchantress decks where it's filled with enchantresses that will draw you cards off enchantments. You'll drop this and just draw a card for playing it most of the time, and then every future enchantment is going to draw you cards, so it'll draw you more. Whereas if you're playing like one of those decks that's really, really deep on instant speed cantrips to draw you cards, this is going to double up those draws as well, and that's like the exact opposite of an Enchantress deck almost. So it's a good card in decks that look nothing alike.
Well, I'm very excited because this card finally makes Alms Collector not terrible.
Not sure.
I don't know. I'm not sure if there's any saving that particular.
Not that good, but
but no, I think I will not be surprised at all, Dana, if like Tuvasa becomes the number one commander that uses this particular card. I think that's a great observation. The next one, we're moving on to black now. We got some Death Touchies here, and Dana, I know how much you love the Death Touchies.
Oh, I do. Hooded Blight Fang, a 2 and a black for a snake. It's a 1/4 with Death Touch, which isn't that exciting. However, whenever a creature you control with Death Touch attacks, each opponent loses one life and you gain a life. And whenever a creature you control with Death Touch deals damage to a planeswalker, destroy that planeswalker. Which is just a little bit of added kind of flavor stapled on. But it's useful. And if you happen to be playing a deck with a whole bunch of Death Touch bodies, you know, it's maybe not going to win you the game, but it's going to nug everybody for a good amount of damage when you swing in.
They should call it Life Touch moving forward, not Death Touch.
There we go. Yeah.
There. So let me give you some numbers here. There are 1,528 Hapatra Vizier of Poisons decks, according to EDH Rec, which is the commander that creates Death Touchy snakes by putting -1 counters on things. And there should be 1,528 of this card in the Hapatra decks. Like, when you assemble a big board of snakes, this to make them attack, that is so, so lethal. I played Edgar Markov for a while, and the Sanctum Seeker, I believe it's what it's called, whenever you attack with a vampire, each opponent loses one life. Mm-hmm. That was very, very lethal, very, very much of the time. And this has a very similar role for Hapatra, and that is extremely dangerous to see the tool that she's been given here. Really great role player.
Yeah, well, it doesn't even need that last ability either, that the killing planeswalkers, that's just kind of gravy that's just like stacked on top, that just, it's already a great card with those first two abilities. And it's, I'm looking forward to playing against it in Dana's Glissa the Trader deck.
You bet.
It's going to be very good there. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, speaking of cards that people in this podcast will be putting in decks, Joey.
Yeah, this next one's real cool. Do you want to read it for me? Because I don't know. I can do it with a straight face.
We have Liliana Standard Bearer, also 2 and a black for a zombie knight. Has flash, and when Liliana Standard Bearer enters battlefield, draw X cards where X is the number of creatures that died under your control this turn.
I want to sing. I love it so much.
Very, very good card, guys. We can move on there. That's all we need to say.
That's enough.
It's a very, very good card.
Yeah, you play this in your Sir Conrad decks, you play this in your Marin decks, you probably play this in your Mildrotha decks, although Mildrotha, I know that's a very crowded deck list these days, but yeah, you sacrifice your stuff, and then you draw all the cards, and it's skull clampable, but best of all, you can also sort of hold this one in case people have a board wipe, and then you can recover really nicely from that. You can bring it back at the end step with a Marin trigger. Don't discount this type of ability. It's different than other stuff like Disciple of Bolas, which I know is really popular in a lot of those decks. Disciple of Bolas lets you draw cards, but you are forced to sacrifice a creature. This lets you make up for it and gives you more flexibility. And it's a serenade to read this card.
And those are two super relevant creature types too.
Yeah.
Both knights and zombies that may just want this just for those creature types. Zombie decks tend to have things that buff up zombies, and this is a 3/1 and it's going to draw you cards. Knight decks, kind of a similar thing. So yeah, this card is relevant, like a lot of these cards, in a whole bunch of very disparate decks.
Yeah, Sadisi, Varina, exactly.
Yeah.
And what, it doesn't even need to be non-token creatures. It's all creatures. So yeah, you're Varina, you have a bunch of zombie tokens out there. Sack a bunch of them, play this guy, draw a bunch of cards. It's the versatility behind this card is absolutely through the roof. As Mr. Necromancer himself, you don't need to explain how much you're going to be playing this card.
Oh no, all of my Avenger of Zendikar tokens have died. Whatever will I do? Draw 98 cards, that's what. Yeah, it's going to be so good. I'm so excited. Let's move on to Peer into the Abyss, which when I first heard someone say this name, I thought they said Peer and Toothy Abyss, but it's not Peer and Toothy. It's Peer into the Abyss, a 7-mana black sorcery for black. So that's a little restrictive, but target player draws cards equal to half the number of cards in their library and loses half their life round up each time. What?
It's such a weird card. Like, yeah, drawing half your library is very powerful. Like, I'm sure there's some sort of combo you can be doing, but it's so weird to think of. Like, what are you going to do with all those cards? Are you just going to discard them and move about your day? Like,
yeah, that's great. You fill the graveyard. Come on. You've been doing a podcast with me for how long? That's my MO.
Too long, Joseph. Too long.
And I think if you're just looking for a combo piece, there's more efficient ways to get down to it in mm-hmm. black, whether it's tutors, whether it's Demonic Consultation or Ad Nauseam or something. But you're drawing half your library. Okay? Like, we can't, I mean, I can say that there's better ways to find a combo piece, but you're drawing half your library. That's crazy.
I don't even know that I want to use this on myself.
I will tell you this, Joey. I have no decks where I want this, but when I was making a list of singles I wanted to get for decks, I just wrote Peer into the Abyss times 4 because I'm going to get 4 copies of it because I feel like at some point someone's going to show me how disgusting it is and I haven't quite grokked it yet. And I'm going to be like, I need this in a bunch of decks.
There are so many things like Nikusar abilities, and Nikusar himself might be a little bit too crowded for an effect like this.
Sure.
But you can punish your opponents for drawing a lot of cards, or if you're playing a Psychosis Crawler, for example, like drawing probably 40 cards or so, there are so many ways to make that lethal that this is a very dangerous effect to capitalize on. But the way that I want to use this is in combination with effects like Wound Reflection, because what I am is evil.
That is a pretty evil combo right there. I do agree.
It's so bad.
So one card that I don't think is going to be too hard for Dana to grok, as he put it, Village Rites. It is 1 black for an instant that just says, as an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a creature and you draw 2 cards.
So efficient.
We've all gotten to talk about cards that we're excited about. And for some reason, the tax accountant that Dana is loves Village Rites.
Well, and I feel like Altar's Reap, which is the 1 colorless and a black version of this, or Costly Plunder even, I think those are cards you want to run in decks that are built around sacrificing things, because the sacrifice becomes then a bonus in your deck, whatever that winds up being. And I feel like at 2 mana, you didn't kind of want to run that generically as a draw spell. Whereas 1 mana, like, you can almost just put this in any black deck, leave 1 black mana up, and when someone removes one of your things, just draw 2 cards for free. Mm-hmm. Or someone blocks something that's going to die, or you chump block something. Like, I feel like at 1 black, it almost is efficient enough then to just generically treat it as a draw spell.
And Altar's Reap shows up in nearly 4,500 decks.
Yeah.
And this is a strictly better version of it. So yeah, there's a place for this for sure.
Yeah.
All right, y'all, now let's move into red. And I know that this is a weird thing for me to be saying particularly, but I am extraordinarily excited about the red cards in this set. This first one, we got a mythic enchantment that, again, I'm not sure I can read this one with a straight face.
Fiery Emancipation, 3 and trip red, 6 mana for an enchantment. If a source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals triple that damage to that permanent or player instead.
What? Ugh. A lot of damage.
What?
A lot of damage is going to be dealt.
I don't get this. I'm sorry, but what? Okay, so Dictate of the Twin Gods shows up in 7,500 decks, and that is a 5-mana version of an effect like this that just doubles damage and also doubles damage that would be dealt to you. This is a home run of an enchantment. 6 mana is a lot, but it doesn't feel like it's that much. The triple red is maybe a bit restrictive, but if they attack you for 1, it becomes 3. If they attack you for 5, it becomes 15. If they have a Purphoros in play, you become dead. If they have a Gisela, you get double and the triple, and you're just like...
And you get a math lesson. You get a math lesson.
Now, I do think this card is like really eye-catching, and everyone's reaction is the same reaction we just all have had about it. But I think if you really get down to the nuts and bolts, green has a bunch of effects that fundamentally do the same thing. Like, I'm not sure this is a better card than Overwhelming Stampede or Crater Hoof or Pathbreaker Ibex. Like, those are cards that when you have the right board state, you drop them and win the game. This is functionally the same way. You have to have a board state to get there. You have to be in that position to drop this and win. I think it's eye-catching because it's in red and you see the number, you know, the triple the damage thing. But Really, I just don't think it's any more impactful than those cards are that I just mentioned in green.
I get where you're coming from, but you just need a Purphoros in play, and that's not taking a lot. Like, this is a shoo-in for those types of decks, or goblin decks. I mean, a lot of those go fast decks, if you make it to turn six and like you want to just drop one Haymaker. I was lukewarm when I first saw this card. I am starting to turn around on it.
But I mean, I think the same is true of you know, Old Roaming Stampede or of Craterhoof. Like, you make it to turn seven and drop that. When turn seven, you should have 10 mana out in green and probably a bunch of elves or something. I think it's just going to kind of work the same way as all.
Okay, so here's why you're wrong and completely horrible at this game, and I'm going to school you now. Okay, now. No, like, that is a different manner of aggression, though. Like, green does have a lot that it can pour out tons of damage, but it's so combat-based. Red has so many direct damage effects that this amplifies that make it much scarier because they don't have to risk anything in combat. And it complements red in a very different way. Like, Craterhoof absolutely complements the way that green can totally swarm the board. But here, what we're complementing this card with is a Mogus God of Slaughter deck, or an Obosh the Prey Piercer deck, or Kervek the Merciless, or Torbran, Thane of Red Fell, or Purphoros, who might even be so quick that he doesn't need it, or Neheb, the Eternal. All of these commanders either like do a bunch of damage or benefit greatly from additional damage, and it's damage that you don't, or like, I don't know, Firesong and Sunspeaker jumps to me as another one, because if you can get the life from the, oh man, like, I'm terrified by this and its political implications, because
It's also stoppable with removal spells in a way that Craterhoof or Ibex or those green overruns aren't without a counter spell.
So say you're playing this in Kervek, Dana. You cast a Reclamation Sage. So Kervek's going to deal 9 damage to you just for trying to get rid of this. That's almost a quarter of your starting life. Like, it's going to be so hard to get out from this.
And I would still take the 9 damage versus the Craterhoof that just is going to kill me every time.
I mean, but by the same argument, though, like, you can also get fogged and the Craterhoof doesn't do anything. So, like, yeah, you're playing the play more counter spells. Sure, but like, there are going to be games where like people don't draw the removal and there's nothing people can do about this, and it's going to cause so many people to just get absolutely ranched.
I think it's a really good card, and Gratuitous Violence was already a good card, and no one was terrified about that. I think the threat is being overplayed. It's cool and it's going to do useful things, and I think no one's going to be talking about banning it here in 6 weeks.
Oh, no, it's
not
going to be a ban. No.
That's not the conversation. What the conversation now has moved to is that when we are fortunate enough to acquire any of these cards for us to play on our stream on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m., twitch.tv/TheEDHRekcast, not the EDH Rekcast, just EDH Rekcast. I was trying to talk really quickly and I completely fumbled, but my point is to say that we are going to both play this to your monumental detriment, and it will be glorious and you will see how wrong you are.
But the same is true of a bunch of cards in green. So I just don't think it's anything this worse than green has a bunch of things that do the same thing. That's fine.
Okay. I think this becomes one of the most popular cards within this set, and for absolutely good reason. I'm terrified of this. It looks amazing.
Yeah, there are so many non-green decks that are going to play this. Like, you play any Is It Pingers deck, and like, this gets out of hand real quick.
You play any Voltron deck and all it needs to be is a 7 power creature to be lethal.
Just be around, yeah. just exist.
Yeah, oh.
Well, these are a lot of like, no one has responses or removal, magical Christmas land scenarios. But okay,
next time,
well, I guess
next
we'll find
time
out.
You Christmas land, Dana, we're going to poo-poo on all your thoughts. But we will move on. Let's talk about the other red mythic in the set then. It's Terror of the Peaks. It is 3 red for 5/4 with flying. Spells your opponents cast that target Terror of the Peaks cost an additional 3 life to cast. And then whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target, which actually does get tripled by Fiery Emancipation.
Yeah, this is really exciting. I'm here for some type of maybe Jeskai Blink sort of deck, but this is almost a Warstorm Surge kind of effect. but on a dragon. So the Ur-Dragon is really, really excited about this kind of thing right now. I would also potentially say the Rakdos Chainer as well, getting a bunch of creatures back from your graveyard, potentially being able to pair this with some reanimation effects or blink effects. Like, this looks like a phenomenal win condition for a whole bunch of players. Matt, I almost wonder if you would play this in Omnath because of how much damage this might be able to deal out.
Thinking about it, man. Thinking about it.
I think any dragon deck wants it too. I think it's mm-hmm. like, without even having a plan built around doing something crazy with it, just dropping dragons in your, you know, literally any dragon tribal deck, this is going to be great in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're casually just hitting for 5 and yeah. 6 every creature you play. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Purphoros, the Bronze-Blooded, the sort of sneak attacky kind of commander who can put stuff into play, or Ilharg, the Razor, I think would also be very well served.
Oh, you bet. Well, up next, we would have Brash Taunter, Goblin for 5 mana, which is a lot of mana for a goblin, but it makes sense when you see he's a 1-1. that doesn't make sense. But he has Indestructible, okay. And whenever Brash Taunter is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to target opponent. And you can also spend 2 and a red and tap it, and Brash Taunter fights another target creature.
Okay. All right. I can see why it's 5 mana now. You had me sold when you said 5 mana for a 1-1, but
1-1 goblin for 5.
It's kind of cool. I mean, the fact that it's kind of a stuffy doll with a fight clause built in, that's pretty nifty. Like, being able to force damage every turn is not something we should forget.
No, not at all.
And unlike Stuffy Doll, you aren't stuck assigning it to a person who then, you know, you do your crazy thing and you kill the player and then it's no longer mm-hmm. useful. This you can tweak based on whoever you need to deal the damage to at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Queen Marchesa is really excited for the political applications that it can use here to have someone, you know, oh, can you attack me? I'll deal like a bunch of damage to the other player if you let me block with this. Nin, the Pain Artist, can also deal damage to your own stuff to let you draw cards. Ooh. And so this could be a great way to draw cards and deal some damage. And any forced combat deck too, like a Thantis the Warweaver, I think will be very, very excited by the ability to like, yeah, go ahead and attack. I've got a Stuffy Doll and a Brash Taunter in play. Don't worry about it.
Those are better situations than I was drumming up. I was just thinking giving it death touch and like killing a creature per turn, but those are better ideas, so we're going to go with yours.
I think the damage does have to be dealt to target opponent. So there is that.
But Brash Hunter fights another target creature. So if you give it death touch.
I read cards.
So we get to go with my ideas now because I actually read how the card works. So we'll move on to this next card since it is a little less confusing. It's Double Vision. It is 3 red for an enchantment that says whenever you cast your first instant or sorcery spell each turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So the fact that it hits instants on other people's turns, it is each turn, not just on your turn. This has some incredible value built in, but you can blow it up. You can play counterspell. So Dana doesn't like it because it's a red enchantment. but what do you actually think, Dana?
I like it. You know, there's a lot of utility in copying spells just in general, but the one sneaky thing I like about these kind of effects, and I liked it in Pyromancer's goggles back in the day, is most of those red efficient draw spells that are, you know, discard a card, draw 2 cards, things like Cathartic Reunion. Mm-hmm. The way they're worded, part of the cost is the discard. So when you copy those spells, you don't have to discard anything. You just get the draw portion. So having this out and you start playing those red cheap draws that, you know, pitch a card, draw 2 kind of things, Tormenting Voice, Cathartic Reunion, like I said, you just get a double draw off it. And in mono red, if you happen to be playing a deck running a bunch of those effects, which sometimes you have to in red, it's just double value.
I feel like this one's actually, I'm a little less impressed by this one in particular. I think Kalamax, the Stormstyre, is going to be over the moon about it. Mm-hmm. But most traditional Spellslinger decks would prefer to have the Swarm Intelligence or even the Thousand Year Storm abilities because they tend to build up many, many, many cards all at once as opposed to just the one instant. But yeah, taking advantage of it the way that you mentioned there, Dana, making sure that you have a lot of little instants that you can use on every turn is probably the best way to go. So Kalamax for sure, but I think it will be probably pushed out by a lot of the other things that Spellslinger decks can already do.
Yeah, probably.
And I think that's two different kind of decks. Like, I think Double Vision is going to be more for like, I could play this in Omnath and I get double ramp spells. I could play this in my Riel deck. That's not really a spell slinger deck, but I can get double Chandra's Ignitions off of it. Yes, like if you're playing the spell slinger where you want to cast multiple spells per turn, then something like Thousand Year Storm is going to be better. But I think there are certain decks here that aren't the spell slingers, but every other red deck that would want to get this because of the situations Dana talked about. Or if you're playing this with any black and you get a double tutor off of it for two mana, that's incredibly powerful. So I think there are definitely different types of decks, but I think it's not really good comparison to say it's comparable to Thousand Year Storm, because I think those are different decks altogether.
Yeah, but that's good advice too, to know that like this isn't necessarily like a slam dunk for all types of spellslinger, especially those that commit so heavily to the one big flourish of a turn. And this can be something a little bit different if you are going a bit more paced, I guess, would be. So yeah, noting that difference is a great place to make sure that you find the perfect home for it. There's one final red card that I want to address because Feather is hungry for it. Feather the Redeemed is so hungry for this. It's Unleash Fury, 2 mana instant, double the power of target creature until end of turn. I'm sorry, what?
It's very good, man. It's very good.
And hey, if you have double vision out,
yeah. Oh, so Calamax also probably really excited about this because it would get the double with then, you know, the double, but also like Feather, this is really good and it pairs well with other effects like Double Strike. So you can do Uncaged Fury effects and Unleash Fury. So a lot of fury.
And then you can triple it with
Fiery Emancipation. Fiery Emancipation. There we go. You've convinced me.
Full circle.
But
man,
this is just,
we did it.
It's so great because there are so many effects that care specifically about the power of cards. For example, Kresh the Blood Braided is happy because you can use it on someone else's creature and get more.
All three of us have decks that will probably be slotting Unleashed Fury into. Like, Valduk loves this because his power is already through the roof anyways, so just give him trample and one-shot some people. This is a very good card, and for an uncommon, it's just a very good role player.
And it's one of those cards that, like, you will see probably left on the table after FNM, assuming FNM ever happens again. And then in like 4 years when it hasn't gotten a reprint and you go to build a deck, like when did that become a $3 uncommon?
See, I don't think it's quite like Teemer Battle Rage Stratus. It's very good because, I mean, Double Strike is an insanely powerful ability, but it is close to being Teemer Battle Rage quality of card.
Yeah, Graven Predator Captain is excited. And I think Xenagos God of Revels might want to consider it just slightly as well, just because that is a surprise and a half if you have already a very big creature that then turns out to be much, much bigger than people thought. Plus, you can pair this with green effects like Rishkar's Expertise to draw even more cards or Chandra's Ignition to deal a bunch more damage than people expect you to. This is a very tricky and really inventive type of combat trick for them to deal with it. I was about to say I'm really excited, but guys, we're moving on to green. And this is where I lose my mind.
This is where we're going to talk about inventive card design, right?
Okay.
Garrick's Uprising, man. This is a brand new effect.
Totally brand new. I can't read this one with a straight face either. I'm sorry. I'm going to just have you guys read
that. I can't either, but I'm going to try. Garrick's Uprising, 2 and a green for an enchantment. When Garrick's Uprising enters the battlefield, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, draw a card. Also, creatures you control have trample. Also, whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, guess what?
You draw a card.
This card is all about drawing more cards, but like this, it's essentially like three different cards rolled into one.
You've got the trample ability, which we didn't need, but then there's also, it is a mimicry of the card Elemental Bond, which is a 3-mana enchantment. Whenever a creature with power 3 enters the battlefield under your control, you draw a card, which shows up in 14,000 decks, by the way, so that shows you a little bit of where this is going to go, but it also immediately refunds itself as it enters. I am putting this into Titania. I hope that people put it into like their Omnath decks too. Like, this thing is... So I can't with it. This is crazy. This is really crazy. And if you're looking for other types of effects like this, also consider the card Kavu Lair. 3 mana, whenever a creature with power 4 or greater comes into play under any person's control, its controller draws a card. That one doesn't get nearly enough love. It's only in 440 decks right now. Don't let this one budget out. Play all of them. If you're in green, you draw a lot of cards this way, and it's really, really nasty.
So now what I will note about this, and there are absolutely a lot of green decks that want it, for sure. But I think like almost all the cards we've talked about, it doesn't go in everything. Like this isn't a Smothering Tithe where you feel like if you're playing white, it's worth running. Or Fierce Guardianship, or like if you play blue, it's maybe worth a slot. Or Arcane Signet, where it's almost always worth a slot. None of these cards, and this one's the same, this isn't an auto-include in every green deck. There's going to be plenty of green elf decks or, you know, your cat deck, I mean, like where you're not going to frequently hit that power four enough to draw. So it's a card that you need to determine whether or not it works in your deck. And I like that versus something like Smothering Tide, as great as it is, that doesn't require you to make that decision. It's almost always good.
Yeah.
I can't get over the fact that it's Primal Rage, which is seen in about 2,000 decks.
Which is a really playable, really good card.
It's a really playable card, but it's 2 mana for an enchantment. But then, like we said, it's Elemental Bond, which is a 3-mana enchantment. So this is 5 mana worth of enchantment rolled up into 3 mana. Like, this is, it's so silly. Like, it's so silly. Like, it's a great card. I'm going to put it in, like, dang near every deck that I have, but
well, and it's also like an important thing to remember about like the way that green can draw cards. It used to be that we had to rely upon having a big board and then you can cast a Collective Unconscious or a Shamanic Revelation, but that, you know, that was it took a bit sometimes and you got blown out by it and those draw spells would be stranded in your hand. And we have so many of these effects now that refund you as soon as you play the creature that you just never run out of that gas, and the high density of them is what has me so excited and scared, because there are so many commanders that can benefit from that. Garrod Conclave Exile is going to love this too because he makes 4/4 Rhino tokens that he'll populate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gishath's Son's Avatar is another commander that highly uses Elemental Bond a lot because all those dinos are huge, and this is another great way to make them all even better than they were before. You can play this in that Ur-Dragon again too because all those dragons are going to be real big. Like, there's just so many commanders that will do this in so many different tribes or in so many different archetypes that will prevent them from ever running out of gas, and that is a very terrifying dynamic for a green deck to be able to set up. This card, bonkers. And I would say that it's my favorite green card, but we're not even done. There's another green card that I'm also really happy about. It's really cool.
It is really cool. I'll talk about this one too, since apparently Joey just has
I'm lost for words.
Decision paralysis with the green cards all of a sudden. But Invigorating Surge is 2 green for an instant that says put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, then double the number of +1/+1 counters on that creature. Now, I also am excited because I want to put this on my Ukima and my Ukima and Khazzar deck and really punish people. But yes, this is a very, very good card. Solidarity of Heroes is a similar type card. This kind of fuels itself, though, which is worth noting.
Yeah, it's really, really good. So the card Hydra's Growth came out that is kind of similar, but takes a while. And that one's very recent, but it's already showing up in 2,500 decks. But this is something that, yeah, Ukima, terrifying. I have a +1 counters deck, terrifying. Mowu, terrifying. Kalamax, also really terrifying to double this particular instant. Halar, I think would be another great one because then you can deal even more damage. There's a lot of places for this spell and I am happy and scared again.
I mean, it's probably still pretty playable in a +1 counters deck as a sorcery.
Yeah.
And it's not, and it's an instant, so you can do combat tricks and do all kinds of stuff with it. It's super, super good.
Put on a Toothy in response to removal and just draw 87 cards.
Yep.
Yeah, that will probably kill you. But yes, you can do it. These are lethal combat tricks, and we're just filling in a lot of really great, not gaps even, but we're giving so many extra effects that these decks have that makes them even better. Like, you can more reliably count on these different types of strategies, and I'm so, so excited about that. Let's move on to talking now about an artifact, sort of the opposite of green. Now we're going on to a big one that is mighty large and nigh uncomprehensible.
So the artifact here we're going to talk about, Chromatic Orrery, is a 7-mana legendary artifact. You can spend mana as though it were mana of any color, and you can tap it for 5. So essentially it's like a Gilded Lotus in that it's expensive, but it refunds a chunk of the mana you spent on it immediately if you choose to tap it. You can also spend 5 and tap it to draw a card for each color among permanents you control.
So that's kind of crazy. Personally, my first instinct was Krufix, God of Horizons, because this provides you with a bunch of colorless mana and you can untap it repeatedly. And it also probably goes infinite with like a whole bunch of other untappy shenanigans, but it also gives you the ability to then turn that into colored mana so that you can then actually cast spells with all the, like, and there's that, but that was my first instinct. What about you guys?
Oh, I immediately thought of Ramos Dragon Engine.
Oh my God.
Because you activate Ramos's ability and you get all this colored mana. Well, this filters it for you, so you don't really have to worry about using exact different combinations of colored mana, because the typical Ramos deck likes to play all sorts of multicolor nonsense. but you cast Chromatic Orrery and you cast a Niv-Mizzet Reborn, because that's easy to do all of a sudden. So I like this the more colors you're playing. I don't like it really in one and two color decks, because then you're paying essentially, you know, 10 mana when you think about it. Only, well, five and tap it, but you're only drawing a couple cards. But if you're playing this in a Reaper King deck, you're drawing, you know, five cards for that, which is a much better rate. And it helps fix your colors, which is great. I mean, Chromatic Lantern is a very, very powerful staple status, I would say, at this point. Because it fixes your mana, and this does this plus generates a great deal of mana, so it's a pretty good card, guys.
Yeah,
I think the true home is outside of, you know, the crazy things Joey was talking about there with Krufix, is in a five color deck where the commander is truly five colors. We're not talking about Kenrith, we're talking about five pips in the commander, where you're also maybe on a budget and you're not running like that perfect mana base, so it becomes kind of tricky sometimes for you to get the right array of colors you want. This is going to be a way to fix that not perfect mana base, and it's going to give you a way to draw five cards off the pips in your commander. So I think that's where it's going to shine, is that person who is semi-casual Ur-Dragon deck or Sign of the Ur-Dragon deck or something, where they're not running ABUR duels and fetch lands. They're just hoping they get the right array of check lands out, and this is going to make it smoother to cast, give them a draw source. It's just going to and be a giant mana rock.
Well, and it even goes into some of those Kenrith decks, because you can use manas of any color to activate those abilities too. So like you're not locked on blue mana to draw cards. You can just spend a bunch of green and red mana to draw those cards. So I like that it helps the budget decks a lot, and it helps those decks that really need it. Like you guys have said, it's a very, very good card. There's going to be some insane plays with it. But I really like that it's helping those budget players kind of build into everything. Like, sure, it does help Golos players, which they don't really need the help, but it's a splash effect, so we'll take it.
I mean, I hope that is the case, because I hope that this becomes a budget-friendly card, but out the gate is mythic.
It probably won't.
It might not be as accessible, but we didn't even touch on its artifact abilities. Like, artifact decks are going to snap this up. You guys mentioned that maybe more colors is great for this, but Duretti, Scraps Avant is also probably really happy, like, freely reanimating a card that provides him with five mana, just digging that right out of the yard. I think Saheeli the Gifted will enjoy discounting this to almost free a lot of the time. And of course, Breya Aetherium Shaper is going to go totally nutso over an effect that is this good and so easy to cheat into play too.
That those are fair applications too. Yeah. Like, I like the versatility to it. I don't think it's, you know, oh my gosh, this is so insane. Like, it's just a very powerful card that isn't going to be too unfair in too many decks, but it's just going to help a lot of different decks and have a lot of play to it. So I'm interested to see what people do with it for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. But the final thing that I want us to talk about, and this one is really just for me, and I think everyone's been waiting for it. Everyone who's like me, because
everyone that is Joey,
because they made shrines again. When I first was getting into Magic, I played with the Hondens, which are shrines that give you extra abilities when you got a whole bunch of them, and I never really felt comfortable finding a place for them in Commander. And then they brought them back. We've got shrines like Sanctum of All, Sanctum of Stone Fangs, Sanctum of Tranquil Light. There's a whole bunch of new shrines, so you can make a shrine deck. I am building this. I have to. I owe it to my 13-year-old self to build a shrine deck, because Sanctum of All is a 5-mana enchantment that lets you find shrines, and then if you have enough of them, will double the triggers of your shrines. And Sanctum of Stone Fangs is a card that drains your opponent's life for each shrine, and Sanctum of Tranquil Light will defend you if you have enough shrines. There's a whole bunch of these, and it gives me the warm fuzzies. And I really hope that the reason I like this set so much isn't just because of this rose-colored nostalgia feeling. I hope that it is that because of the impressive reprints and the cool commanders and the amazing cards of the 99, and also for the fact that these cards give me the warm fuzzies.
Well, I'm not going to build this deck, and I have no particular like nostalgia for shrines, but conceptually I love the idea of using a core set to just do something because you can. We can put shrines in a core set, it's not going to hurt anything, so let's do it. Why not? Like, I love that idea. What a great place to do that. And I hope that's the kind of thing we see moving forward, where they use these core sets to say, let's put another gate land for the gates decks, that kind of thing, because why not?
Yeah. And Cissé Weatherlight Captain is a five-color commander that can tutor these out for you. Ooh, that I'm personally really excited to use for this. And I'm so happy. I think I really do. Like, every time that we were seeing new cards previewed for this set, my jaw just kept dropping and dropping. And again, I really do worry that because of all of the products that we've had coming out, that this one, people might overlook some of the impressive stuff that's happening here. But this is easily my favorite core set, even above the core set that we had last year, where we were introduced to a whole bunch of stuff like Kaikar, which is a really, really impressive set too. That's where we got Golos. That's where we got Field of the Dead. That was also a really impressive core set, but this one is stealing my heart even more because I feel like the cards are powerful but still fair. They fill roles and they're inventive and they break new ground even within established archetypes. And I really hope that it doesn't get too overshadowed, because I really appreciate a whole lot of what's going on in this set.
I do agree, Joey. Like, just what they're doing overall with this core set is absolutely amazing. I can't praise WotC enough for just how overall amazing the set is. And not to just constantly sing praises right now, but like, this set is great. Like, it does so much. Like, it's got amazing reprints. The new cards do so many different things, and they're playing around. Yes, having shrines back is very interesting. But then they have these big, like, splashy, mythic-y feeling mythics like Fiery Emancipation. They have Teferi that's doing something a little nuts, but I mean, and then they have dogs, so it's hard to be mad about this.
Yeah, how can this not win? It has the good dogs. This is the best.
Forget the whole core set portion of it. You know, that's maybe a low bar to clear sometimes, because core sets have been, we had some bad ones. This is just a really good Magic set filled with a bunch of really good cards, core set or not. I'm thrilled. I would be thrilled regardless. If this was a set, thematic set on a plane, I'd be happy with it. This is a great set. Full stop.
Yeah, and I know at this particular time, folks are probably talking about stuff with Jumpstart, or maybe there's previews for the next set coming out, because again, there's been a lot of products happening recently. But this has rocked me to my core set. Aha. No? All right. Bad at the dad jokes.
Are you here for it?
I'm here for it. Yes. Thank you, Dana. I love this. I think it's really, really exciting. And listeners, we would love to know which cards you are the most excited about from this core set too. And especially the reprints. We didn't even talk about them too much, but there's really great reprints. This is so, so good. But we've got to call this episode to a close, because it's already run on long enough. I'm so excited to see the way that this, all the numbers shape up for this core set. It's going to be really cool. Cannot wait to get my hands on some of these cards. Thank you guys so much for joining me. And hey, if our listeners want to get in touch with any of you, where can they find you all? Matt?
So you can find me on the Twitters at Mathimus55. That's MathimusIMUS55. You can also find us streaming Wednesday nights, twitch.tv/EDHRecCast.
And Dana.
You can find me on the Twitterbirds at Dana Roach, and you can hear me a couple times a week on my other show, CMDR Central.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter, and you can find the cast at EDH RecCast on Facebook and on Twitter. And if you have a question, a keen insight to EDH Rec's data, or maybe a challenge the stats pick that you want to tell us about, you can contact us at EDHRecCast@gmail.com. Our thanks again to Josh Lequai and the whole team over there at the Command Zone for handling the post-production work on the podcast, and of course to our sponsors, TCG Player and CardKingdom.com. You can find them using the price info links on EDHREC or by visiting cardkingdom.com/EDHREC to help support the show. We will be back at you next week with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDHREC your deck before you wreck your deck.